science any more than just what he said, so I just run straight into it. Going to school. That was hard for me going to school, so I started writing about school. My first day at school. Growing up in the 60s was really quite mild. Everybody was young, free, running wild. And at 5'6", I didn't have hair to grow. But back then, I was a child, so how was I to know? That around me was a whole bunch of people just like me. All running about here and there, carefree. I don't recall much of what went on up there before, but then suddenly I was wide awake at the school door. On entering that room, I was scared, getting ready to run, but there, dressed in black, was a very small man. "Come in," she said. "What's your name? Sit down there in the chair. Let's get you started. Dear, dear, my dear." So I sat in the chair and left on my own. I glanced around and I saw I was not alone. There were lots of kids who had been left in this room with a witch dressed in black. So we saw nothing but doom. Parents all gone with great smiles on their face. All 4-year-old children abandoned in this very strange place. Then she did something which we thought weird even at 4. She twisted the key in the lock on the door. There were lots of tears and wailing and crying, and the girl next to me fainted, but at 4 she looked like she was dying. So what did I know? I was 4 years of age. And here I was abandoned with a witch locked in a cage. And if memory was to be believed, wasn't it September? Halloween was quite near. I wasn't too bad at first, but now all I had was fear. Think about it. 4 years old, locked in a room with a woman all dressed in black, who smiled a lot while keeping the keys to freedom tied safely around her back. Well, now I had to plan a way to get out. In my head were Halloween, witches, being abandoned and left without. And off to my left was a window left ajar. I'd be out that thing and I would run away far. As soon as the witch took her beady little eye off of me, I'd be out and gone. I'd be heading away. I'd be free. "Quiet," she said, amid the roaring and crying. "Enough of this. It's my patience you're trying. There's no mammy or daddy here to help you while you're here." Yet more panic as she instilled in us more fear. But she slipped up as she went to a girl that was distraught. There was the window, and my freedom, or so I thought. So up like a hare and through it I went. "Freedom," I cried, "mine was heaven sent." Out I was, and as I dropped to the ground, another blasted witch standing there is all I found. "What have we here?" she said, with that same knowing smile. "Have we a little man who would run a mile?" She took my hand and brought me back to the room, dispelling all thoughts of my impending doom. "Come on," she said, laughing. "You'll be nobody's fool. Today's your first day of many days. Welcome to school." I'll get rid of the paraphernalia. I like this one myself, actually. I don't like a lot of my poetry, but I like this one. It's called Devil Child. I don't know where it came from, but, well, I do, but I can't say. It's called Liability. Devil Child. And it started off as a song. You know that song? "Where do I begin to tell the story?" Yeah? So it started off like that, right? And I thought, "What's Jesus, where did I come out of?" So, Devil Child. "Where do I begin to tell the story of how my life began? From when I first could walk, my feet took off and ran. Sent to a Catholic school for girls, which I felt was an error. Pretty soon I was to be called a holy terror. When all the boys and girls would come out to have their break, sat within the classroom, my lunch I had to take. And while they played with friends chasing around and having fun, I was sat in a desk, tied to a seat with my guardian and none." You can tell it on right now. "I was a kitog, you see. I wrote in my left hand. She said I was a devil child sent to walk upon this land. And as long as she could breathe, she'd bait the devil out of me. This world she would save, and everyone would see that no son from the devil would write within her sight. She would see him off with all her strength and love. So daily, she would tie my left hand to that hard table and force the devil out of me until my right hand was able. But I was no one's fool, and I practiced each and every night. I was going to teach this nun and give her an almighty fright. Each day as I sat at home to do my lessons she had set, I grabbed two pencils and practice with both hands. Until the time when I thought both writings looked the same, and I was nearly ready to begin my little game. I learned to write while I spoke to my mum and dad, and when I did it with both hands, surely I looked and seemed so glad. So off to class I went one fine and sunny day, and the nun berated me, tying my hands so it wouldn't stray. So there's no need for rope, I said, as I can write with left or right. Which would you prefer, sister, so we can avoid a fight? Oh, clever child, she said, as she undid the blasted rope. I was about to show this demon I was nobody's dog. The devil plays tricks on us, she said, and he'll have us all believe, but he holds an evil secret hidden up his sleeve. Sit you down there and let's see what you can do. Here's a pencil, devil child. I have no confidence in you. As I sat with two pencils and began to write upon the page, she was in total shock and beginning to feel her rage. But I kept on writing and stared at her by the door, both hands writing and now talking, sure that none she hit the door. A lesson I'm sure that none took with her to her grave. This devil child was never hurt to beat her bruise or say. I must have had a tingle of religion, because this one is Barred from God's House. Which I was, actually, yeah. Barred from God's House. I was a very good Catholic Mass attendee. After all, it was stories on a Sunday for free. Or so I thought, until the end of each tale, when a basket appeared each week without fail. And into this basket, what money you had. And the man at the altar was telling us, I'm glad. God will be pleased to know that you care. And if you have any more cash, will you put it in there? So I figured it out, that we stood at the altar, and you could tell stories, and you didn't falter. A basket was sent round the pews in the church, and if the story was good, sure, God knows how much. Money was left in the pile up in front, where your men regaled us each week by the font. So I practiced my reading, and how I tell my tale, and I went up in front of my audience to regale. And when it was told, I stayed back waiting in the church. My story was good, and I wanted to see if it was worth much. And what do you want, your man said to me. I want my share of the money in the basket, just like ye. As there they sat, the collectors counting the cash, the stash. I wanted my share. I'm ready for the cash. I heard them all saying who gave more and who gave less. And your man put me into this box to confess. But I wouldn't budge, and he couldn't explain that this was church money, and there it would remain. Get out, you pup, before I put my boat up your arse, for trying to make my sermon look like a farce. Fine, I replied, and on my walk home I'd tell all who gave what and who didn't give anything at all, and told them I did on my way home that very day. I knocked on the doors, telling them what your man had to say, and who he was pleased with, and who paid all they could, and now I was paid nothing, and wasn't I surely just as good? Next week at Mass, there he was at the door. You're barred, he said, you're not welcome here anymore. So at 9, I was barred, and he wished me nothing well. But he did tell my parents I'd be going straight to hell. Who cares, I said, but for going on your farm. At least I'd be welcome, and for sure I'd be warm. I picked this one because I like Martin O'Brien liked it, and he's a school teacher, so at a time when poetry is shoved down your throat at school and you have to learn it, you don't want to learn it. So later in life you think, I should have learned that. So this is Bloody Daffodils. I wandered lonely as a cloud, the sun came out and shone so proud. What's your story, shining with pride? I wander lonely and I cried. For all your shining high in the sky, I dare to wander about and try. Damn you, son, you make them smile. When I wander by, they run away. I amble by, without any frills, and does some blasted teacher waffles on about daffodils. I'd like to wander as the sun, and shine a smile on everyone. See them laugh as each day appear, not run for cover and hide in fear. And all at once to just come upon, bloody daffodils, damn everyone. But here I am, just a simple cloud. No noise, just wandering, nothing loud. Then up you pop from eastern skies, poems written, all praise, no bloody lies. So come on then, shine at me, don't miss, and on those deaths I definitely piss. Then on a hill of ale you'll see a mark I leave, I'll wait for thee. Now wander up in sky so high and ask yourself, but oh, why did I? cheating men, there are none. Or lying women, there are none. A girl in Galway who's getting a degree in something or other put out a survey to find out how many men cheated on women and how, and vice versa and so forth. And she came up with this theory and I questioned it. And this is what I got from it. It was all percentages and I hadn't a clue what she was talking about. But hey, cheating men or lying women. 8 out of 10 men will admit to being a cheat, simply because most of them are slow on their feet. In a survey, some fool decided to cast for information. I'd like to see those who gave her confirmation. Where are all the men who are having these affairs? And is this why we name them all as being players? And if they're players taking part in this game, keeping it a secret and not seeking notoriety or fame, but 8 out of 10 men say they're getting a bit in the side. Talking about it in pubs with chests full of pride. Having a drink and boasting in front of their mates. While their partners are at home in all kinds of states. So if all of these men are out there and cheating, relationships and marriage steadily depleting, it appears it's the men who are berated for their sin. But who are they cheating with? Where does it begin? Let us recall that it's 80% of those cheating men. When the only data from women is that it's 2 out of 10. So it's either 8 men bragging or 8 lying women, but somewhere in there there's still someone sinning. This still leaves 2 men out there trying their best, with 2 women chasing them trying to get under their best. So out of 10 men, there are 8 that are bad. And out of 10 women, there's only 2. No, that's sad. Are men on the whole just too honest to lie? Are women just lying, quoting pies in the sky? It all became a bit dark and too shady for me. So having listened and learned, here's what I see. Somewhere in all this could be 8 lying men. Okay? Or to put it another way, 2 extremely very busy women. As a rule, I try not to drink. It usually gets me into trouble, and I don't need any help in that respect. But having come home from the pub when I was drunk, don't answer this, you. I woke up the next morning and I thought, oh God, I gotta write this. So drunk and romantic. I gotta get into the mood here now.
Don't fight.
And it's Marvin. She could get looking. Drunk and romantic. Oh my lord, baby, it's cold outside. Let's light a fire and get warm, we can hide. We can close the curtains and just cozy up. Just you and me with wine, we can sup. We can lock the door and not be bothered. And in the nice heat, we can just be smothered. I'll make us safe in the fire's warm glow. And as we feel the heat, well, you never know. Put the shaggy rug by the fire nice and near, and you'll be safe with me, have no fear. Or I can rub you a warm, or I can run you a warm bubble bath and wash you down and all things like that. As it's so cold, I will blow dry your hair and whisper sweet nothings close to your ear. Oh, would you rather I cook you a meal and show you the culinary skills I can reveal? Now wouldn't it be nice us sat by the table, you and I, you know I'm able. Take my hand, let us sit in the chair. Let me stroke your beautiful hair. There's no one here but you and I. Come here, pretty lady, with me, will you lie? And as we lay here side by side, no, there's nothing, a little I shall hide. Oh, dear woman, outside it's so cold. My thoughts are of you and I, growing old. All my senses are beginning to freeze, overwhelmed by romance. Please, oh please! Let us relax you in the arms of your man. You know it's easy and you know that I can. For all I am is there inside you. My feelings are sound and my love is so true. I love you dearly with all of my might. Now open the shaggy door, it's a freezing cold night. My hands are frozen and together I have to rub. I should have come home sober, not drunk in the pub. I keep kicking this bloody thing. Has a limerick, I suppose. From Gloves to Pen, it's the name of the book.
Yeah.
And Patricia and Sandra kind of beat me up. I think there's a word for that, like spousal abuse or something.
Yeah.
I get that regularly. But I had this hiding somewhere, and it was like one verse, and I thought, you know what, it's kind of true, so it's more of a serious effort. And I wrote this from Gloves to Pen after being beaten up. You might remember that bit halfway through it. My journey began when I was just a lad. I was wild, troublesome, and I ran carefree. Others seemed to play with the things I never had, and my father decided it was to be boxing for me. So to the local club we set off one day. It'll put a stop to our carefree style. A natural fighter, my old man would say. For training, we ran many a mile. I would box the older lads with all of my might. I was good, and I was very light on my feet. But give me a pen, for I found I could write. My fists were firm, but my pen wrote neat. And so I went as I grew much older. I defended each family and friend. In and out of the ring I was getting much bolder. Those who crossed me were unable to defend. For I would not give not a single inch when I believed that I was right. Like my father had taught me when in a pinch. Chin up, chest out, stand tall and fight. In adulthood my way in life saw me battled and often bruised. But the pen was calling, writing's less strife. My fists were not to be used. So I sat one day with pen in hand and wrote some lines on a page. I wrote of places in foreign lands and of this man's life in rage. I was brought up in the firm belief I was the family protector and defender. I'm older now, and to my relief, my pen is the better contender. It's been such a long journey from way back when I've hung up those gloves to write with my pen.
Yeah, we'll go away, but
more.
More?
I'll be going to the book next. First Holy Communion. Our first taste. We were told to get a move on into this huge room. What they forgot to tell us was it was full of doom. Inside there was this tall, wiry looking nun, hands clasped together, twiddling her thumbs. Sit in those chairs, she bellowed in a stern voice. And at 8 years of age, we didn't have much choice. Now you let her here in my first communion class, and so help me one way or another, all of you will pass. You were here to learn the rites of religion this year, and if I can't teach you easy, then I'll do it with fear. If you have to talk, then raise your right hand. Then wait, I'll ask you, and things will be grand. For all your past sins, each of you will repent. So we couldn't spell religion, let alone what it meant. An hour into this class and someone had something to say. They raised their hand, as asked. Their arse got ridden that day. This set a precedent for things yet to be revealed. For inside her habit was a torture chamber concealed. A leather strap, a thick ruler, a duster from the board. And when she let fly, she never missed. She always scored. Someone in the classroom ended up in a lump. And if you weren't fast enough to return her missile, you got a thump. If by any chance you were late for a class in the morning, first thing she did was, without any warning, into that cupboard where she keyed and locked the old door. You were in there for the day, you were taught no more. No lunch, no playtime, and if she found you inside asleep, both hands on her desk and with leather strap, you would weep. On a Friday to the church we would walk to see Mass. Each boy holding hands with a girl in his class, and returned to our classroom, all hurried and in haste. Here was a dead martyr, which we were about to have a taste. With this thought in mind, we were sent on our way. With one belt from the strap, each of us was told to go pray. Hurry, she would say, and get your bended knee. In fear of our lives, each of us would flee. Our very first lesson in religion beat into our head, and on for a taste of a fellow that was dead. Drivers at school were never much fun, and Christ died only because he married that nun. on as I
can. Yeah, yeah, come on. Good day to hear it,
mate. I'm probably reading too fast. I had a sister. 15 of us living in a three-bedroom house, and I had a sister who would stay for dinner. Of course, we were late to the party. You got no dinner. But this one had a pair of elbows in her. She was like me, though. She had elbows everywhere. We just never got past her. I still haven't got past her. You know, it's like 50-odd years later. But we used to eat bones with meat on them. Eye bones, breast bones, apple, that kind of stuff. So I decided one day to teach this one a lesson. And she's way older than I am. Didn't reckon on me having a brain, but a bone of contention. Being born into a large family is not what I call fun. But I was, and that life soon had enough, had me on the run. For if you were just a few minutes late for a meal, then someone older or younger than you, that food would stay. Breakfast was always a race to the table. Winter was porridge for those who were able. Summer would be flakes of one kind or another. And there was our referee of 13 kids or more. Now, having been born into the middle of this fine clan, it was eat or go hungry, and for meals we all ran. For dare you be late when the mother dished it from the pot. We lied saying someone who got theirs when they'd not. Just to get more in our dish, which held dinner. Some of the young ones went hungry, so they were only beginners. I had an older sister who'd always need more. She had elbows that would knock your ass to the floor. I just had to come up with a plan to slow her down. So us younger ones stood a chance, knock her smile into a frown. It was the day of the offal in the stew with some soup. As we gathered at the table, all 13 of this group, when this older sister had cleaned her whole plate, what I had planned was to forever steal her plate. I took the bone she had cleaned and left empty of meat, and placed it firmly in her slipper, under her feet. And as she knocked the small kids out of her way, when she leaned back in her triumph, the pain made her sweat. She screamed in agony, with all of her might. I remember it. And while they tended to her cut feet, pondering her plight, to the pot I went, without waiting in line, and filled my bowl to the brim. My belly was going to do fine. What mother wanted to know was how the bone got in her shoe. She hides him there, mother, to make a fool of you. She pushes us younger kids away to one side. But this time she forgot in her shoe the bone's hide. And as she tried to get more than was rightfully her share, if the rest of us starved, she didn't care. She screamed at me then something that was unreal. As I told her, in my queue, each one of us had to heal. Be mindful if you give those younger than you some stick. Take your time when next you have a bone to pick.
One more,
yeah?
No, two, at least. We can hold up to one way.
I actually have about 900 of these at home. I have no idea what to do with them. I could be here for Christmas.
Do another box of one.
I don't have another box of one in this. I want to do a serious one. Morning after the night before, sounds, 29. You're all about the book now, I'll tell you all about page 29.
Alright, good mark getting.
One of contention we just did. Okay. Morning after the night before. I like this one as well. Funnily enough. The sun has not yet risen. But he is out of bed. Silently, he rises, chores lined up ahead. The fire must be lit from 6 that he has gathered in a house full of children, none of whom he's father. The table must be set, the porridge put on the gas, all things made ready. He will send him off to mass. With all of this done, he must gently wake the brood, give them all the breakfast, make sure they have some food. One by one arising from out of their deep sleep, slowly, half awake, down the stairs they creep, into the kitchen where their morning meal is found. They know better than to make a single sound. This weekend morning ritual is a habit now as such, for today it is Sunday, and they must go to church. This day is much harder than all other weekdays, and he often retreats into his own mind's head. There are lessons to help with after school. He has to be clever. He can't be a fool. And everyone helps out right throughout the week. Siblings, sunshine, others who are meek. But Sunday, after the night before, with shouting and fighting and slamming of doors, is a day when what is left in its wake is best left sleeping for the children's sake. He is just 12 going on 13. And Sunday's the day he can always be seen. The sports are peeled and the meats in the oven, when the parents arise, pushing and shoving. He's learned, you see, there's always a fight over something or other on a Saturday night, and it goes on till Sunday with chores left undone. No one else bothers, so he's now the one. At 13 going on 30, he does all that he can. His childhood becomes the mould of this man. As the years pass by and time just flies, the past is recalled with tear-filled eyes.
I
have 10 sisters. Growing up in a house with 10 sisters is like, he's attacking me with the mic again.
And put it in the right position so most people can hear you.
I have no problems with getting myself in a position.
Just walked in to see position.
Ten sisters, three boys in a three bedroom house. You dare not step into the girls' room. And you just don't. I mean, there's weird things with having girls' rooms. So we were always told to stay out. But I wrote this to Vixens then. The Vixens then. It's very hard to overcome the death of a dear mother. Each one of us had this bond, this parent like no other. She always seemed to be there without ever being called. Nothing we did, it seemed, would ever her fault. But I recall mine, in my mind's eye she is keen, like the manager of a football team, 11, 2 South, 13. I was born in the latter half, my number it was 8. For many meals that she did cook, I was often late. My manager was good, she held back a dish of food. For her little team, we got fed, no matter what her mood. In a flat with 3 bedrooms, we all of us resided. The girls in one, the boys in another, so it was decided. The boys' room was tiny, really very small. All 3 of us in there, but none of us could pass. Yet in the girls' room, there were all of them 10. No boys allowed, and if we tried, they just barred up their bin. I don't recall ever having tried to get into that room I crept. I saw a brother do it once, and he came out and he just wept. And when I asked him why, he cried, having escaped the room. He said anyone who dare go in there faced eternal doom. "You're not telling them," he said, "and I'll tell you no lies. If you venture in there, they'll scratch out your eyes. And should you pop in there anything more than your head, the first boy will attack you, and you might just end up dead. The other 5 will sit and watch as they're all much older. And God help you should you decide to be brave or bolder. Put them in, they'll shout from the safety of their hive. The things they might do to you will make you sorry or alive. They have weird things in there, you see, with flaps and all and hooks. And all over their body they'll beat you with their books. And all you have compared to them is a lousy old comic. And one bed between the lot of us, which is a bit ironic." But I ventured into that Vixen's den, while they were out missing all of the 10. The place was a mess, the floor covered in clothes, and while I searched for goodies, the door opened, I froze. My screams were heard as all 10 returned. They tied me up shouting, "To the stake, you'll be burned!" Thank heaven for an angel who appeared like no other, my saviour, my hero. God bless you, my mother.
One more to the right.
Alright, one more.
Go.
Answering Love's call.
Alright.
This is Paddy's then, we'll be staying on home, we might get lucky. good night's sleep is arms looking. Answering Love's call. When darkness falls and night surrounds your very being, and the light you once knew has been torn apart, and all around you there is nothing but foreseen, you think it's the end when you thought it was the start. Who can you turn to in these times of war? What to do with this feeling of being alone? Is there someone out there to whom you can go, and you wonder lost why things are just so? Has this hard life made you want to take flight? Is there no one left for whom you wish to be there? Is there no love worth your standing to fight? Well, it seems not for you does a single being care. When the pains in your head and your heart start to mingle, and you wake in the morning with a sorrowful plight, and the harsh thought scares you, now being single, as you stare in the mirror at this heartbroken life. You can see no way through this hurt and this pain. Lost and unloved, darkness surrounds you, having tried before, never wanting to again, your endeavours having failed to find love that was true. All thoughts of trusting someone now quenched. Never again will you bear your tortured soul, as you lie in shadows in a sea of darkness drenched. Healing now is your driving goal. Then somewhere in the distance, there's a light to be seen, as carefully you tread one foot at a time, gaining strength in spite of all that has been. You begin to sense that things might just be fine. Yet each time you try, the harder it gets. But you pick yourself up whenever you fall. The brain might forgive, but the heart ne'er forgets. The hurt nor the pain when you answer love's call.